to the Mug Meeting Summaries Podcast. Our October 12th meeting started with the election of the Mug Board for the 2010-2011 year. While ballots were being counted, Doug Shufelt moderated the roundtable session.
John.
Yeah, I think we should call Mr. Jenny Dimples. William Dimples. Okay. So,
Chad?
That's right. It's an obscure joke, but somebody got it. Hamachi is a VPN and tunneling tool. Anybody using it?
How's that spelled?
So it's spelled like the sushi. H-A-M-A-C-H-I. Hamachi.
I've heard of it, but I've never used it.
It's popular among the 2600 crowd. But it's not the only thing out there. I think parts of it might be proprietary, but it seems to be favored over something.
SSL or IPsec?
I don't know.
Wasn't there some news that it is a VPN package and it uses a range of IP addresses that were reserved but are now that reserved range is being tired or changed or something like that? I forget the details, but I remember hearing that they use an IP range that's routable or it's like not commonly used.
Not familiar with that part, but I'm going to jot that down. Thanks.
Yes.
In Windows, when you take a USB key and plug it in, the hardware serial number of the USB key is recorded in the registry. When you auto mount in a Linux desktop, does the same thing happen? And if so, where the hell does it get started?
It's in gmessage. Depending on the distro, it might show up in syslog.
But it's not stored in any place where
actually
plug in, it'll be recognized differently.
If it's stored anywhere, it would be under udevd slash rules.
Yeah, that's if you're running udev.
Yeah. I'm saying, if you're running udev, that's where it would be if it's storing it.
Oh, are you talking about Etsy udev?
Yeah.
Well, actually, putting things in and out should change Etsy. You
know, no, it udev will change.
Keep state in Etsy?
Yeah.
Isn't that a file, a hierarchy standard violation? Shouldn't state kind of info be in var?
All I know is that it has state information in it concerning Ethernet cards and CDs, CD-ROM.
Is this an extension of the old HAL and autoplay argument for replacement?
Yeah.
Replacement UDIF?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Supposedly HAL's dying away.
Might be available in a slash sit and another slash sys or slash proc.
Yeah,
slash
it would go away when you demount it, so it's not.
Yeah, it would go away.
It's not persistent doing this.
So Windows One will like stack up like
Windows
100 different.
If you've got a machine that's been real busy and you woke up the registry and look in the right place, there's like 400 hardware addresses because it's got to keep the drive letter assigned to that key every time it plugs in and tries to get the same drive letter.
Okay.
Which of course is totally pointless because you plug in two that both have D. No one else would do.
Right.
It changes it anyway, but
not really thinking.
Yeah, what else is new with Windows?
Yes.
I'm looking at revamping our web application, which uses PostgreSQL as well as HTML and Perl, into a more modern framework. So we got lots of choices, like Ruby on Rails, Python, Django, .NET, whatever. I thought I'd throw that out, not to ignite a holy war, but if people would give out some of their favorites, and let's just hear a few comments.
You don't get any .NET recommendations, right?
Not in this room.
Yeah, don't hold your breath.
Okay, cuts that one.
Well, I'll start with that, like, before you get into sort of language and libraries and stuff, one thing that I think is always worth looking at is whether you want to base a web app on a web application programming framework or something higher level like a content management system. The advantage of content management systems is you've got a lot of stuff built in. Disadvantage is sometimes you pay for that complexity when when you want to, like, they're usually very extensible. You have incredible plugin frameworks, but you got to do a lot after that. But it's always worth evaluating that trade-off between, do you want to base your web app on an existing content management system, or do you want to use a program framework? And just to use examples so people know what I'm talking about. By content management systems, I'm thinking of Drupal, WordPress, and Flow. And when I think of more web application frameworks, you mentioned Ruby on Rails. I know a few Python ones. There's TurboGears, there's Django, there's Zope is what Flow is built on. Look at things at that level too before you kick like actual underlying framework itself. See if there's CMS functionality that can actually save you a lot of work.
Why does it need revamping?
Yeah.
What's wrong with it?
Very unruly. You're using Perl with basically direct calls to Postgres. It's like 6 years old. And it's like as soon as you make one correction or one change over here, something breaks over here. And it wasn't documented very well to begin with. So if we go to a framework where everything is done in one place only, and it takes care of your grunt work producing the HTML, we don't have to dot every I and cross every T sort of thing with the HTML code. We really just have a higher level language where we can build up what we want the functions to be.
How many different people will be administering provided content and changes? The more people, the more attractive a CMS becomes because it's got all that functionality built in to keep all these people out of each other's way.
Probably 5 or 6. Anybody's looking for employment too or taking applications.
Who's he looking at? Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at that number of people, and the good news about a CMS, if you're prepared to put up with the learning curve, which is a little ugly, but let's be honest, there'll be a learning curve. Yep. But then the good news is down the road when you want to change to HTML5, you probably find you can just take the thing and just migrate it, change the template to HTML5 template.
CMS?
Any CMS. No. Just generically, does he want to write it hard, or does he want to use a CMS?
I was going to learn WordPress.
CMS, WordPress is the CMS.
Very helpful.
Also, if you're going to you probably know this already, but even if you use something like Django or Ruby on Rails, those things are still only as good as the people using them. So it's not going to solve all your problems. You still need some discipline to use them effectively, and not, you can screw up in everything. So. But Ruby on Rails and Django and things like that still do take a fair investment of time to learn how to use properly. As long as you're willing to invest that, then that's okay.
Kick PHP is one that I'm using. PHP specifically, and it works well.
When did it die? When they did release 2.0. which has been around for how long?
Yeah.
Oh, 2.0 will fix that. No, it's been 18 months now. So. Early in the days, like the old 1.3 actually looked pretty good in the beginning, and then I'd say it seemed to just stop. And,
there's coding there is another PHP one.
Which one?
Smart, yeah. But you can go to WordPress. It's not really a CMS, but it might do for what you want. So take a look at most of the stuff that we talked about is free. Go read some reviews and look at some tests. And look at some demos and look at what you want for the particular job.
But that'll keep people organized. It'll be easier to maintain and manage the people, which is where you're going to put them reading. Mm-hmm. You want to write code.
Yeah.
Well, Brandy University has gone to using WordPress for its website. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Just FYI, WordPress is the topic that will be presented at next month's meeting.
Yes. Don't get too gentle.
And yes, you can do complete websites with it.
Yes.
Does anybody have experience speeding up cups?
Don't print.
Slow it down.
Yeah. Well, part of your pipeline is slow.
Well,
you've broken it down.
I take an email, I print it from Windows direct to a printer. It's 15 seconds of sending, and then it prints, right?
do it from CUPS, the same email, it's 60 seconds before the printer actually gets it out. Same printer, same email, same hardware on the on.
Well, there's a network printer.
This is direct connected. So then I tried, well.
Parallel port,
old school.
That's what I was saying. On the computer that's hosting it, is itself running CUPS?
Yes.
Okay, but you're saying it's a problem when you have a CUPS client connect to that other
and
CUPS
directly
server.
Too.
So you've replicated this completely isolated on a single machine with the printer direct connected.
Yep.
So you're dual booted Windows and Linux on this box.
Two separate machines, the exact same
identical
hardware.
Config.
Yeah.
Okay.
But is one doing say PostScript, the other doing PCL?
I'm thinking, yeah, on the Windows machine, it's not going to PostScript at all. It's just doing probably to the Windows control language directly to PCL.
Are these your HP 4SIs?
One driver is a 4SI, and the other one's just a 4. I tried two different drivers, too.
Okay. That's a good point Bill had. PostScript rendering on a 4SI is noticeably slower than PCL.
Well, this is, we did it both to say they're not PostScript printers.
So oh, okay. So you're rendering down to PCL in both cases?
Yep.
Like it's a one-page email?
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. PostScript's not going to make that much difference.
No, well, not on a single page, you're right.
60 seconds for one-page email is pretty long.
Yeah. And I thought it was at first it was just through Samba, because I originally was sharing through Samba. I'm going, okay, well, Samba's doing a lot of interference, but even directly printing from the Linux boxes.
You tried them in both orders, then?
Tried them in both orders?
Yeah, the Windows one first, followed by the...
Yeah.
You're powering the printer off and resetting it between them, and there's no starting it.
No. I even tried that, just sending the same email again right away. Thought, okay, well, maybe...
If you watch the panel, is there a difference between, like, first
character
to the printer?
No, looks like they both get there pretty quick.
They don't start to blink or whatever. First, it's one takes a lot longer.
Do you print both the files? Do you print the file sizes?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay.
It's hard to compare the file sizes on the fly, though, because you never know what's actually on the wire.
Yeah, but with parallel printing, you're restricted in a lot of ways by the transmission speed, so the file size will make a big difference.
But you can't tell whether it's like coming up in little bursts or small characters.
But still, you should compare the file size.
Just the size would be interesting.
Can you try something else?
If I take down the file size, what would I do to CUPS to try and... Is there a way to
try different printers with different drivers on CUPS? Often there's a couple of choices you have.
Right, yeah.
And there's a couple of other obvious possibilities that could be different, not because of CUPS necessarily, but depending on the app you're printing from. What are you printing the email from?
It's from Thunderbird.
Okay, so in Windows, Thunderbird is using... I'm not even sure what is its print library. On Linux, it's using the... Cairo canvas, I think, Cairo is the component that's actually doing the print rendering. If Cairo on Linux is doing something as simple as embedding an entire font, whereas Windows is only embedding the characters used, over parallel port, that could actually make a big difference.
Yeah.
I can get it to print the file, which should show you.
Print the file will show you.
The other thing might be is what is the default resolution of printing and its difference between one is shipping high-res print, and the other one's doing economy mode print or something like that. It might be a significant size difference.
On a direct connected printer, Windows will always be slightly faster than CUPS because Windows starts spooling the print job out to the port instantly, effectively instantly.
I can see, they're within half a second of each other, the printer starts receiving data.
Okay.
Then it's not too big a deal there.
Then it's something in your data stream, I would say.
What about parallel port mode?
What do you mean? Both actually start out at the same
both
time?
ICP.
But
there's something in Linux that has to be tweaked.
Linux and Windows will differ significantly in how they handle the parallel port interrupts. You're right. Because even though the parallel port is in ECP mode, not all Linux kernels will drive it as an ECP port. And whether it's polled or interrupt driven will make a big difference to speed, too. It's actually probably easier to figure out what is doing a Linux and then replicate that under Windows to see if the same problem happens.
That might even be a problem with the hardware, the parallel port of the hardware itself.
It getting 60 seconds. I want to
make the Linux. Yeah, I know. You don't have network ports on either any of these printers?
Yeah, well, that's a long-term solution. This is a short-term fix.
Take the Windows machine, print the file, take that file to the Linux box and dump it to the printer board.
That's a good idea.
Just from the command line.
See if this is a pure hardware moving bits problem. Hmm.
Yeah.
And then compare the file sizes. Because if you find that the same file on the Linux box just takes forever, then you may have a parallel port issue.
That's a good idea.
You said you use two different machines? You should both of them have ECP enabled parallel.
Yep. I checked that just before coming to the meeting. I'll play
with
some
more.
Good luck
with
that.
There's so many variables.
What is it? Since the dawn of computing, printing has been such a
and it hasn't gotten any better.
No!
Well, it hasn't gotten somewhat better. But some of the drivers now, some manufacturers are actually producing Linux drivers.
Oh, yeah. And meanwhile, Xerox and Lexmark, which have both always been paragons of openness, now don't publish their PPDs anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Pain in the ass. You have to download the Mac OS X driver or the Windows NT 4 driver, extract it, and pull the PPD out of that.
Idiots.
It's just a pain in the ass.
We didn't care much about you.
I have a question. I've noticed for quite a while, and it kind of irritated me, and I started to look at it, and I still don't seem to have a solution for it. But when I drag a fav icon, like URL, I drag the fav icon over to my Thunderbird message, I often get, like about 30% of the time, I get a bunch of Chinese characters as opposed to, you know, normal characters. And I'll do it again, and I'll get the proper URL. Then I'll do it, you know, and I'm just saying, like, you know, I haven't seen anything. I just wonder if anyone else had this problem.
You're hosting under what? What OS?
On Linux.
What's your locale say?
I don't know. Something like C. But I don't
have any problem.
Because if you depend on whether you're going coming from UTF and you want to see, you can have all sorts of problems. If you're dragging from one app that's locale aware and the other one's not.
Yeah, yeah. But the point is, I'll do it, then I'll do it again. Like, the same one, you know, and then it's wrong.
Yeah,
that's
wrong.
It seems like a random kind of thing.
Is the page finished loading? It's not like it's part loaded or.
No. Okay. Anyways, I was wondering if anybody else had that problem.
Do you know the exact translation into another
platform? I should try that, shoving it back into Google Translate. Well, this is Chinese. I don't even know if it's I don't know how it would go.
What happens if you drag it past the Thunderbird?
Whatever.
What happens if you drag it back to Firefox?
I can't drag it. No, I've never tried dealing with Chinese outside of it. Strange, though, that nobody else has had it.
If it was a Windows box, I'd say it's not ours.
Yeah, right.
Universal solution.
Interesting.
Donna? Actually, there is a bug in one of the core GTK libraries where it does not always correctly detect the character set. There's something when you feed it UTF-7, it thinks it's not UTF-7, and some apps actually do generate UTF-7, as I found out the hard way.
Yeah, well, initially I thought it was something to do with the website, but I kind of come to the conclusion that it's not.
Although it just occurred to me, the bug that I've seen, because I see it in evolution, at least on a daily basis, something very similar, it is semi-random. Not quite as random as you're describing, but sometimes it's like, you know, it's like one day it'll happen, the next day it won't. So it might be related. I don't know.
I mean, obviously, if I cut and paste the URL, it's always correct. Only when I drag the page icon.
What's your window manager?
Weird.
No. I mean, whatever.
That's hard.
So the window manager is very minimally involved in cut and paste.
Sure.
That's more of a client kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, but if it's development, the GTK manager that's running for dragging around.
Still has
and that could be your GTK issue.
It's a rendering issue, though, not a...
Because Thunderbird would be using the... would be using the Mozilla library, not the...
Yeah, but so is Firefox.
Yeah. But then it's not GTK.
Still GTK.
Yeah, I interpret it as the Firefox problem, because obviously Firefox is the one that is... It decides that the fave icon, you know, what must be the ASCII representation of the fave icon, and it must be Firefox. The browser.
Huh?
It is after the standard view translation.
Yeah.
To whatever your estimation is. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just sometimes it.
Anyways, I'm surprised that because I just, you know, I'm just running sort of vanilla.
Does it make a difference whether you've typed into the message in Thunderbird before you drag and drop or not?
I don't think so. I think I've done it with not typed.
So, John, did you have something? Or?
I had some similar thing where there's a file in the file system, I'm probably using Nullis, and I'm trying to figure out. Is it 5icon.ico?
Yeah.
And I had some puzzlement when it landed. But someone mentioned earlier, you drag it out and drop it into an email. Well, if you see the characters, then drag it back, and I predict that Google Translate will translate these things. All your favorite restaurants are owned by us. I did have that puzzle, though. Facebook on ICO, drag it somewhere, like, what is that? Try to get a graphics reader to show up. So a bunch of ICOs, where is it? I got puzzles. I'm going to do it again.
Windows icon format.
And Wapping did 16 by 16 pixels, I think.
16? Well, 32 by 32 now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I hand drew one of those 16 by 16 pixels.
We all have a one time.
Anyway, if there's no other questions, maybe we should move on. Since looking at this agenda, it's time to close the round table discussion.
All right, so before we proceed to the presentation, I'm just going to quickly announce the results, and I'm just going to list the nominees that are elected to the board without giving vote counts. So the nominees that are going to be the board for the coming year, Sean Cody, Trevor Cordes, Gilbert Dutilleux, Michael Dube, Robert Kaiser, Catherine Skrupa, Doug Schufelt, Adam Thompson. So thank you all for your votes.
Actually, just before we move on, just some interesting details about the election. We're actually all quite shocked at how close the election was.
There were often just one vote difference.
it was.
Including in those last few places. So
I don't know. I just
it's rather unfortunate.
It.
See, I felt the opposite way. I was expecting that given
very
the structure.
Close.
You know, you can mark 8, up to 8 out of 9. So.
Well, not most people did vote for 8 out of 9. I mean, there's a substantial minority that didn't, but most did. So, I don't know.
Basically, the last half of the ballot, half of the candidates were within one. That's how close it was. Quite close.
Well, any of you who stood for election, if you're not on the board, you're not getting away.
probably tap you on the shoulder to help out in some other way.
Well,
so thank you all for your participation. That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meeting summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website. You can find it at muug.mb.ca.